Hi, guys. My name's Brendan Seery. I'm the deputy editor of the Citizen newspaper. I'm also a motoring enthusiast, and recently I had time to spend an extended period with a Ford Mustang Mach-E, which is an electric vehicle. I did this during a trip to the UK, and I've been one of the few local journalists who've actually been able to spend an extended period with an electric vehicle. And it's thrown up a few issues that people who are interested in EVs in this country and elsewhere might not be aware of. And the question that we have to ask is South Africa ready for EVs? Now, I'm not even talking about whether we're ready for EVs with our useless Eskom and no power. Even if there was power, there are plenty of issues when it comes to running an EV, particularly if you want to use an EV to travel long distances. And this is what I discovered with the Mustang in the UK. Now, first of all, the Mustang, when you think about a Mustang, throw all of those ideas in the dustbin, because this is not a Mustang other than the taillights look a bit like you're used to from an old Mustang. And there's that Galloping Horse logo, which is a Mustang. But otherwise, this is a pretty full-size SUV. The one I had was an all-wheel drive, which means it had two electric motors, one on the front axle and one on the back axle. And together they push out an amazing 258 kilowatts of power, and more importantly, 500 newton meters of torque, 580 actually. And as you'll all know, with an electric motor, your torque doesn't arrive on a torque curve or a torque peak. It's there from zero revs, so it's instant torque, which means the car is quick. So this car, despite weighing about 2.8 tons because it's got an extended range, bigger battery, still gets to 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in well under 6 seconds, about 5.8 seconds, which means it's easily able to deal with Golf GTIs in a robot-to-robot dice. The interesting thing for this car was that it had what is known as the extended range battery, which is 98 kilowatt hours. Now that is, and the battery is effectively on an electric car the same as your fuel tank on a conventional car. So those 98 kilowatt hours actually in the real world only translate to usable 91, 92 kilowatts. And that's because the software on all electric cars preserves a little bit of the battery at the end when it's supposedly fully empty. There's still a little bit left. And the recommendation is that you shouldn't really charge it to 100% every time, because there is that section that it doesn't use anyway. And the interesting thing is that when you look at a car like that, let's say you're talking roughly 100 kilowatt hours, and you work out the consumption. Now, the consumption is calculated in distance per kilowatt hour. So in the UK, I was getting 2.6 miles per kilowatt hour, which is about 4.5 kilometers per kilowatt hour. And if you work that out, that means you've got a range of around 450 Ks, which is quite a bit lower than their claimed range of over 500. Part of the reason for that is that in winter, which it was when I was in the UK, temperatures, the highest temperature I think we saw was about 7 degrees, and sometimes it was -4. When the weather's cold, batteries of any description lose their efficiency, so your range goes down quite dramatically in winter. But even so, I think 4.5 kilometers per kilowatt hour, it's not bad, but that's a very big battery. A lot of the batteries in EVs are smaller than that. So there is your first issue in terms of using an EV, is the temperature. If your outside temperature drops, your efficiency goes down, and it has to be recharged much more frequently. So the Ford as a driving experience was amazing. It's got plenty of power, plenty of torque. It handles a lot better than you'd expect an enormous SUV to handle. Very well equipped. Very comfortable car to drive, and a very appealing design as well. And I think SUVs are the way the world's going. But one of the problems we did have was you start developing what has become a common thing overseas and in countries where they're running SUVs, and people who own them will notice this. It's called range anxiety. So it's like the kind of feeling when you're driving a petrol or a diesel car and the fuel light starts coming on and you kind of go, well, am I going to make it or not? The difference with EVs is that when you're driving an EV, there are not that many options in terms of places to recharge. Like you have petrol stations around every corner. So that then you start watching your range like a hawk and you watch it go down. And if you use the power, the range goes down. It's the same as any petrol or diesel car. It's all determined by how much power you use, the less range you will get out of it. But in the case of an EV, and in the case of the UK in particular, there are a number of issues that people in this country are not aware of. For example, there are 40,000 electric chargers, public electric chargers in the UK. However, they reckon they must need about 400,000. So in other words, the car sales are growing much quicker than the number of chargers. So in December, for example, around Christmas, you had stories about queues at motorway service areas where they've got chargers, fast chargers, queues of up to 3 hours for people waiting just to get onto a charger. Now, when it comes to chargers, they are different strengths. So if you charge an electric car using a household current, like, for example, the Mustang, a household current puts out about, on a good day, 3 kilowatts per hour. So it will take you over 30 hours to charge a Mustang from empty. The alternative to that is to fit a household wall box, which will put out about 7 kilowatts per hour. So in other words, it makes it a very viable option to charge a car overnight. Public charging facilities in the UK range from 3 kilowatts right up to 350 kilowatts. The more powerful the charger, obviously, the less time it takes. So if you've got a 150 kilowatt charger, as we used on a couple of occasions, it'll take you 40 minutes to charge your car. And then it's not bad. Then it's a kind of a viable charging option. If you take 40 minutes to add 300 or 400 km of range, it's not bad. It's still though, and that's the top end. It is still a lot slower than filling up a petrol car and suddenly having 600 km of range. So there's your issue. And the problem with the UK is that in many cases, because the infrastructure has been put together in a very haphazard way, some of the chargers don't work. Not all of the connections are compatible. And then, of course, a lot of them are linked to networks which require you to have an app. Whereas, in fact, the easiest way to do it is to use a tap on your credit card or your debit card. And we found a number of charging points didn't accept our cards, and it wasn't because they were South African. They wouldn't accept it. You had to go on via the app and then charge via that. And some of the apps charge you a flat fee of 100 Rand just to connect and then disconnect 5 minutes later and then charge you another 100 Rand to reconnect again. So there are those issues. You also have issues where people are parked. People with petrol cars or diesel cars are parked in the electric zones because people are selfish. You also have to, in some cases, you pay not only for your charging, you pay for your parking. And in the UK, I don't think people realize we parked in Oxford and we paid 75 Rand for 2 hours to park. No, in fact, no, 75 Rand an hour, 150 Rand for 2 hours to park a car in Oxford on a Sunday morning. So there are all of those issues that make it using an electric car for a long journey in the UK particularly quite problematic because you've got to do a lot of planning and you have to have a lot of time. Now, I think those are going to be issues which we will see in South Africa. And fortunately, ironically, it may turn out that Eskom is doing us a huge favor because the problems with Eskom may slow down the uptake of cars, electric vehicles, such that we have a chance to leapfrog a country like the UK. So instead of us having public chargers with 7, 10, maybe 22 kilowatts, we can have most of our chargers 50 kilowatts and above, which makes it actually then starts to make the car a more viable option for longer trips. But the bottom line is, even in the UK, no one does a trip like Joburg to Cape Town, which is 1,400 Ks. Very seldom do people do that kind of thing. And even if you do it in South Africa in an EV like the Mustang, you're talking about probably four pit stops to refuel on that trip. And even if you're lucky and you get away with 150 kilowatt, you're talking an extra 4 hours, so half a day. So I think that is the thing people have to deal with. And I think the reality is that the costs as well, not only of the cars themselves, but electricity. In the UK, electricity is hugely expensive, especially at services and fast chargers. And I can see that starting to happen here now. And you can see it. I think I've had a look at a couple of chargers here in South Africa, and you're paying about six rand per kilowatt hour at these chargers, which is twice what you're going to pay for your home electricity, twice and even more. And I think that's going to increase as more and more electric cars start to come on stream. And that, I think, will be our problem. But hopefully we will leapfrog the problem of small chargers. But I think the lesson for me about living with this car is that the electric technology is fantastic from a technological point of view, and everything else being equal. But there is still nothing to really replace the convenience of a fossil fuel powered car, either a petrol or a diesel, and the convenience of that. And I just think there's no way that you can pile a family into the back of an EV and head to Durban. Because what are you going to do with kids for 4 hours or 3 or 4 hours that you're charging? They're going to murder you. So a Cape Town trip will be even worse. So I think those are things that we also need to consider. The other thing, of course, is that the infrastructure required to support these high power charges requires much better cabling, much more expensive cabling. And we all know what happens to cable in South Africa. It gets stolen. So there's another issue. But all in all, I think it was interesting. And for me, what the most intriguing question was is that this Mustang was a right-hand drive produced in America but designed to be right-hand drive. Now, there are only four main markets for right-hand drive vehicles. One is the UK, and that's a big market. The other is Australia, and that's increasing in size. Then there's Japan, and then there's South Africa. So Ford have not said whether the Mach-E is coming. In fact, it's certainly not on the horizon at the moment. But there are so many other premium manufacturers with those sort of cars here. I can't see how Ford is going to can resist bringing that in, for no other reason other than it is a halo type of car, because it's really – the technology is fantastic. There's nothing else like it on the road other than something like an e-tron GT or a Jaguar I-Pace. So I think the car itself would sell if they brought it to South Africa. But I just think – and there will be people who buy it because they'll be paying probably around 1.8 million rand and upwards if we just convert the UK price. And those kind of people, I'm afraid to say, will be the people who want to tell the rest of the world that they're green. So it reminds me of some years ago I went to Los Angeles, and you will see more Toyota Priuses in that city than anywhere else on the planet. Because all of those people want to signal to the world that they're green and they're environmentally conscious. Meanwhile, they've got a Prius that they'd be seen in, and they've got three F-150 trucks with gas-guzzling V8s sitting in the garage. So, yeah, all in all, I think we have got a long way to go with EVs. But hopefully we should, because of Eskom, we'll have a little bit of breathing space to step back and look and learn from the mistakes of other countries. Thanks very much for listening, guys. If you want to see more content like this, then get a hold of the Saturday Citizen and check out our lifestyle motoring section every Saturday. We're not motoring journalists. We're journalists who write about cars, and we're ordinary people. So you'll find a different point of view there, that's for sure.